Good evening, everybody from Gustavus City Hall. Welcome to our work session for September 12, 2022. And I'd like to begin with a reading of our vision statement, and Council Member Bella Furr has agreed to read it for us tonight. Bella?
Sure. We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources, with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions.
Thank you. So our agenda tonight is primarily to go through the the general meeting agenda to make sure we're all up to speed on those items. And as we go, we'll work down through that agenda. There are a few things that I'll insert that aren't on the agenda. And then at the end, I've got four short items to get some feedback from you on during the work session here. We'll start it out as usual with the approval of the minutes. And so I hope you've all read through them. And if you haven't, please do. I didn't see anything wrong with them, but maybe you'll see something we missed. So please review them so we can vote on them at the general meeting. We'll have committee and staff reports from the Gustavus Public Library, a quarterly report. The city treasurer will have the monthly financials. City administrator will have a general meeting report. I'd like to call on Kathy Leary, our city administrator, now for a work session version of that, the early version, if you would like to give us a run through of some of the great stuff you've been doing. Maybe I'm catching you unawares here on this. Sorry,
I thought it was further down.
You're so important, you're right at the top.
Oh, whatever. Okay, so it's been a pretty busy time since the last meeting. One of the things we've collectively done along with the mayor was we reviewed the repair needs at the old post office building with Wes Bacon Schulte from the NPS, who was representing the Office of History and Archaeology. So Wes, myself, Mayor Taylor, and Ken McGowan, who is the intended lessee of the building, I prepared a lease for 8 months, including an addendum, which is a task list or a table outlining the areas of both the financial and work responsibility for the repairs. And at this time, the main thing we're waiting for is AP&T to upgrade the transformer and then get a power line into the building, because the last one was vacated a certain amount of time ago, and they have to upgrade the transformer in order to provide enough offshoots to it for not only that building, but for other folks. With input from staff and to bring us up to a more realistic spending threshold, we updated the purchase order policy, which is before you to review. Understand that many years ago, there were reasons for having it be as small and such a low threshold, but times have changed, our buying power has changed, and in order to lessen the paperwork burden and the signature burden and make our workflow a little bit easier, we've tried to increase some of those limits and add other documents that are executed, fully executed, and signed contractual documents that we maybe don't even need a purchase order for because it's a contract. So those are before you to review. If you have any comments, it'd be great to get them. With the mayor, we met with John Barry, who's doing business as Neville Engineering. And we wanted to discuss his availability for contracting, local project management, and engineering services. He's right here in town. He has a vested interest in Gustavus, and he has credentials to do it. So we're happy to have him be able to do some projects with us once in a while. John's going to review the five options presented by P&D Engineering for the Good River Bridge project, bank stabilization piece of the project. And he's going to provide the city with his recommendation as to which option he feels is best or will serve us best. And from there, we can work with our grant writer to submit this project for infrastructure funding. It's one of the ones that we have ready the most that's ready to go or pretty ready to go. And hopefully we can move forward with getting that in as a grant soon. So I attended the Alaska Municipal League summer meeting in Sitka, which also included the Alaska Municipal Management Association meeting. And I was really glad and grateful to meet other city managers and administrators and network with them. And I learned a lot of their challenges and their solutions. And they were very helpful to me being a first-time person in that organization. Their discussions and topics included legislative issues, and discussion included bills which impact our communities or might have the potential to impact our communities. Because it's an election season, there was a town hall sort of Zoom meeting with the candidates. Any candidate who was running was allowed to participate. And we provided information about local governments and advanced our priorities and also suggested policy positions during that webinar. Among the other issues, including our lack of adequate cell phone service, I brought up our disappointment on the non-passage of Senator Kyle's PFAS legislation and articulated how that issue impacts so many areas of the state and that all Alaska legislature representatives should be concerned. So Senator Kyle commented in the response section and thanked us for staying on top of that issue. We also had discussions regarding the challenging operating circumstances. A common thread among small cities was minimal staffing to accomplish a lot of issues and projects. Additionally, the concern over fuel costs, inflation, workforce shortages, all of those were addressed. We reviewed Alaska Municipal League's resolutions and introduced potential new resolutions for consideration, either by identifying individual community interest or other AML in the aggregate resolutions that benefit all municipalities. I asked them to put forth a standalone resolution on PFAS and not to couch it in clean water or village safety water in general. And other cities agreed that that needs to be a standalone resolution. The redistrict of the REAA operating authority, which has been sort of a thorn in many people's sides around the state for even back when I was on the school board, they had a resolution moved forward by that. I told them why we were not in agreement with being forced into a mandatory borough, that we already were facing a borough petition and we were disinclined to join an informed TUNA via a resolution through our city council. I understand the Ketchikan Gateway Borough's issues with this, given there are four school districts on Prince of Wales with no contribution to their schools, but I told them another layer of bureaucracy is not the answer in our region. So I don't know if they're going to advance that or not yet. Finally, I had previously planned to go to Anchorage over the Labor Day weekend to tie up some loose ends of my own moving chores. And in the interim, they announced the Senator Murkowski's infrastructure summit. And since I already had a place to stay and I was already there at minimal cost to the city, I just stayed for the transportation infrastructure summit, which was, I was glad I did because I learned a lot about what we could, would be available to us. Additionally, sort of in lieu of a whirlwind 2.5 hour visit to Gustavus, as she and one of her staff had planned, I met with Senator Murkowski and four of her staff at the Denina Center. And I'll detail that and more of the infrastructure week at the upcoming general meeting. There's a lot of stuff to know and it's too much to talk about right now since I just got back. So, but suffice it to say, and I hopefully we have other council members on. Do we have other council members on?
Councilmember Muscoviac.
now is the time to get prepared if we want to get projects funded in Gustavus. From low-cost energy project financing to adequate water and sewer solutions to freight and long-range transportation plans, you know, this funding is being granted in the next 4 to 5 years. Huh? Yeah, so things like safety corridors and ports and harbors and community access projects and landfill operations, making our electrical grid more resilient if we need it. There's a lot of funding avenues, and the sources of which will take even to seasoned bureaucrats some time to navigate. So just, you know, so the takeaway of all of this is that if we want to realize a breakwater at the dock or a new compost building at the landfill or, you know, the Good River Bridge project, which is pretty much one of our, like I said, one of our readier projects. We need to get the design documents. We need to be competitive in applying for the infrastructure funding. In other words, we may have to spend some money to reap the benefits of obtaining funding for larger scale projects, such as a dock breakwater. I realize, you know, some folks are opposed to too much federal spending. However, the funds are already being allocated, and we don't want to wait till something gets to a critical mass to have to deal with infrastructure breakdowns we either can't handle or are forced to manage at the FEMA level. We need to be proactive. So I'm advocating for us to take a look at that. Hopefully the new members are coming in. We'll, you know, people will feel the same way, but people are going to be, this is a grab, and people are going to be going after it in communities. And the tribes get, we don't have like that much of a tribal presence here. A lot of the tribes qualify in their own right. So we're going to have to be really prepared if we want to be competitive, particularly with a project as big as a breakwater, you know, for the dock, which is part of our bread and butter in the community, really, you know. So anyway, that's my report for now, and it's been very busy. Thank you.
Thanks. Any council members have questions for Kathy about stuff she's been doing?
Hey, I'd just like to wish Kathy a happy birthday.
Right. Yeah. Happy birthday for sure.
Happy birthday, Kathy. Thanks for all your hard work.
Oh, sure. Thanks, Jim. Oh, no, no, no. No.
Perfect. You're required to wear that through the entire meeting.
Does that mean I get to be the queen and adjourn the meeting early?
Quite right. God save the queen. I think, as Kathy mentioned, we're glad to have John Berry willing to do some project management for us. And if it wasn't clear what we're doing here, we're using funds that are appropriated for a particular project. We can do this. And in addition to using it, say, for a consulting engineer that may be designing the project, we can use it also to, with John as a consultant or under contract for that particular project, to manage the project for the city. So that way we can assign John projects to do that, say, Kathy and I can't do, or we just don't have time to do, and he can focus on projects like, say, the Good River Bridge, and we're going to have to follow up with getting grant funding for that, and then we'll have to pay for, we'll have to have another appropriation probably to pay for actual design documents and so forth. John could write the bid documents that I usually write. And so we can leverage his time to get a lot more stuff done, I think, and maybe stay on top of some of these projects better than I've always been able to do. So So we're going to try to start out with using the Good River Bridge as a project. We might do some others, like say the ditches on Same Old Road, where we have to ditch a section of that and install a bunch of culverts. And he could take that as a project and determine exactly what we need, write up the bid documents and so forth. But what we would do is just make sure we've got enough money in the project to cover his project management services. So that way we can do that without putting on an employee to do this. And we're doing it based on just on a project specific basis. So he's excited about being able to do that for us. And we're looking forward to making better use of, you know, getting more stuff done through that method. We don't have listed on the agenda for a staff report from our Marine Facilities Coordinator, but I know Ben Sadler has been working on the steel float issue and the problem with anchoring it over a Bull Moose Cove. And I believe he's online. And so Ben, if you're available there, we'd love to hear a summary from you of what the issues are there and what you found out and what our way forward is.
Thanks,
Ben
Mike.
Sadler.
Yep. All right. Do you have me?
We do. Yes, please proceed.
Oh. Okay, thank you. So the problem has been that when we moved the float over in the spring, the line had been tangled, and somehow they pulled the buoy underwater and popped the buoy off, and now the lines are laying on the ocean floor. And everything that I have tried to do, including mapping the bottom with Brian Todd, going over with the charter fishermen, or just going over and dragging the bottom, we've been unable to locate the anchors or the lines on the east end. And so where we're at now is I've discussed our problem with different diving companies and different companies like Western Marine or Channel Construction about how do we go about retrieving our lines and securing them back to a buoy so that we can get our float over there here in November. The first week of November is the plan for moving the float over. And so finally, I've spoken to Global Diving, who has come out here in the past for different reasons, boats sinking, et cetera. And they are now working on a quote to get me. I was hoping I would have it by today, but I don't. But they are definitely willing to come over here. They understand the nature of what it is we need done. And they're going to send me a quote letting me know how much it'll cost to have a diver come over, dive down, detach the spectra lines from the chains, bring that up to the surface on both ends, the end that we have and the end that we're missing, take those over to the shore, untangle the lines, and then put the whole thing back the way it was, or as close to the way it was when DOT had it set over there in the first place. And so I hate that it's got this far in the season. I was hoping that I would have had this task accomplished by now, but unfortunately this is just the way that it's happened. But it does look like now we definitely have a way of getting this taken care of. And so, that's unless you guys have any questions, that's the situation, and that's the only way that I've come up with that we can deal with the problem.
Anybody want to add anything? Joe, I know you've been active on this. Did you have anything to ask or add to it? You got your turn on your mic.
Yeah, there's all kind of stuff going through my mind that could be problematic over there, but there's nothing we can do until if we do get Global Diving out here. They seem confident that they can fix it, but these are two pieces of 200 foot long, 2-inch spectra line that are probably tangled up, going to weigh a lot. I don't know how we're going to muscle them around and get them untangled and back in the water. And I don't know. There's nothing to do but see what their quote is, see how confident they are that they can make it happen, and in a time frame. We've been using Brian Todd to go over there with his sonar equipment and kind of map it out, but he's going crabbing 1st of October, so we've got a couple weeks left for that boat.
Yeah.
You know, kind of one day at a time, and it's going to become a crisis.
Okay, well, I'm glad to have you guys working on this, because if we don't have a way to anchor it, then we're stuck with, I suppose, with it being at the dock. I mean, at the float system where it got damaged last winter, and we'd rather not do that. Is there any chance of moving it anywhere else, such as putting it up on the beach, or it's too big, I guess, to get into the harbor. We've never done that before.
There's two options. I don't know. Chime in there, Ben, if you want. There's two options we've considered. One is in the river that we would have to pump the water out of it.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. Could you speak closer to your
mic? Sorry. One option that we've talked about for a long time is putting it in the river, but we'd probably have to pump the fresh water out of it because of icing, if it is fresh water. The other is one that we talked about this morning, putting it on a flat spot parallel with the access to the island there, that part of the dock. But I've taken that to different people to have them shoot holes in my idea, and they're able to do that. One is that DOT is not going to let us tie anything to their pilings. And even though we could get an excavator to bury anchors of some sort in the sand out there, you need a lot of permitting to put an excavator on the beach.
Yeah.
So, but it's still possible, because it could be an emergency. We don't want to have the thing wrecked again, because the state's told us 2 or 3 times they're not going to do this again.
So. Yeah. Okay. So I guess, sir, Ben, anything to add to that?
You know, just that, the river, you know, moving the wooden floats up the river with Elm, and knowing the way that whole thing works, you know, there's a lot of issues with taking steel float up the river. I've expressed that I think that that's a bad idea for multiple reasons. So I don't like that option at all. But, you know, if we had to drive it up onto the beach, I think that that's possible. I don't think that that's what anybody wants. And so I'm hoping that Global Diving is able to do this. And just a response to Joe's, you know, what kind of knot are we going to be dealing with? 2 years ago, Elm and I were able to pull a knot up into his boat. It hadn't quite got as bad as it must be now, but we were able to get it into his boat. It took us about 2 hours, but we were able to untangle the knot. So, you know, anything can be done. And we do have additional spectra line. We have the original spectra line before DOT had Western Marine replace that when they reset the float. So if we had to abandon the line that's there and add on new line, we do have that available to us. So I think that is a good idea. And then moving forward, I have some ideas I've discussed a little bit with Joe and some other people that I will put together something, a scoping document or some kind of presentation for the council on ways that we can move forward once we've solved this problem, so that we don't find ourselves a few years from now in the same spot. But until we're able to get the current situation under control, I didn't want to offer too many, like, long, you know, down the road things, but, you know, I want to get this problem fixed. And I have a lot of confidence that you know, Joe and I, in some ways, we think alike, and in the fact that we're both assuming the worst, but I'm hoping for the best. And so I'm confident that whatever Global Diving comes back and tells us that it will be expensive, but it won't be out of our price range, and that we'll be able to get this taken care of. And hopefully this will be the last time we have to deal with anything like this.
Okay, thanks. I see Jim Muscoviac has his hand up. Jim?
Yeah, it looked to me like there's an awful lot of marine growth on the floats. I think that they should be assessed. Maybe it takes a diver, but to determine if the floats also need cleaned.
So, you know, Jim, that's...
Oh, marine growth.
You bring that up. Yeah, there is this year an exceptional amount of growth on the float. I talked to some of the charter fishermen earlier in the season because it's the first time I've seen it like this. And I believe it was Steve Petty who told me that something, and I don't understand how all this works, so correct me if I'm wrong, but something this year with the temperature of the water, it either didn't get too cold or it did get too cold or something happened. And he said that it's not only on the float, but that they're noticing it on their boats and other places, that there wasn't a die-off like there normally is. So I have been monitoring that, and I've been wondering if that is something that we need to address. I'm glad that you brought that up, Jim, because I don't know. Will that die off in the winter? Is there, you know, I'm not 100% sure why that is, but I have been keeping an eye on it.
Okay, thanks for bringing that up, Jim. And yeah, let's keep us informed on what you think about that, Ben. Okay, anything else on this topic before we close out on? Okay, thanks, Ben, for that update. Under the consent agenda, the first item we have is confirming the appointment of disposal recycling center operator Ian Barrier, who's hired for that position. Kathy, are we just going to do this with a motion? I see that there's no paperwork in the packet on it. How did you, do you know how that, I don't think Paul's on, maybe he is. Probably not.
So we can just approve Paul's recommendation in mine, because I was on the
committee. Yeah.
So we were just going to ask to approve the package.
Sure, we can just do that with a motion then. And so we'll have a motion on the agenda then for one of us who will put forward to approve. Is that... okay, well, I guess we, it is on the consent agenda, so maybe it doesn't need a motion then, because the consent agenda, if it says confirm appointment on the consent agenda, so maybe you're right, that's all we have to do.
Unless somebody asks for it to be something, you know, pulled for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Okay. I was just trying to think whether we needed, you know, what the item actually constitutes, but I think it's described just fine. So yeah, let's just leave it on the consent agenda as that. And when we pass the consent agenda, his appointment is thereby confirmed. Okay. Scoping document for the Boat Harbor Waste Removal Project is on the consent agenda, and that's another one that Ben Sadler has developed. And so maybe, Ben, can I go back to you again for a brief summary for the council here on what you've got in that document, and they can read the whole thing in the packet, of course.
Sure. Thanks, Mike. So basically, it's just a continuation of the Salmon River Harbor cleanup project that was, I believe the scoping document for that was approved in 2017 or 2015. I can't remember off the top of my head, but either way, there was $27,000 allocated to clean up the harbor, get rid of the old boats, clean up the old floats, build the kiosk, some other things in there, including picnic tables, et cetera, which kind of didn't seem didn't seem like everybody was interested in that. So there were some things that just weren't done. But anyways, the cleanup project kind of stalled out with a few items left to be accomplished, and just unable to figure out a good economical way that everybody was happy with for removing a few of the items, including the black sailboat hull, the what was formerly Donnie Chase's boat that's in the middle of the boat harbor, and some of the wooden float skeletons. And so in 2020, around the time that COVID first started, the council and the treasurer and the city administrator were asking the different departments to maybe hold off on money or return money if possible so that we could easier balance the budget for that first year when we didn't know what was going to happen. And so the Marine Facilities Committee at the time voted to return all but $9,000, almost $10,000 of the money that was left, about $20,000 left at the time. And so we do still have about $10,000. It's not enough. It may not be enough for the remaining work to be done. And so this scoping document is basically asking for the council's approval to go ahead and put the remaining items out for bid, and then to fund that work being done in a reasonable amount of time. And that's it. So like I said, there is about $10,000 left. There's about $10,000 left. We'd like to put the remaining items out for bid, get that stuff cleaned up. So that's the plan. And if it comes up to over $10,000, I guess that's the idea of putting out the scoping document to get approval. Mike maybe could explain the reasoning better.
Right. Yeah, I think the idea is to describe for the council what we want to do to finish cleaning up the harbor. And we've got, you know, see photographs of most of the stuff that needs to actually be removed. And what we would do once the scoping document is approved, since we have $9,000 already, already appropriated, we would go ahead and put this out. We would just develop an RFQ, put it out for local contractors to bid on, and see what we get. And if the bid turns out to be more than the amount in the budget, there are several things we could do. We could reduce the stuff that's being removed, or more likely probably just do another NCO to transfer the rest of the money, whatever, say we need another couple thousand or something to the project so that we could finish it up and just get rid of this stuff. But this could be done over the whole winter. There's no big rush to do it. So we would have time to appropriate more if we need more money. Joe, were you wanting to say something?
Yeah, I was wondering if this can be broken up into smaller jobs, if there's a way to get around asking for bids on this. Because I've talked to Alan, he's game for doing it. Mainly we talk about the concrete boat, and we both know how that thing is put together. It's just that nobody knows what they're going to get into trying to demolish that thing. And he's game for it. He just doesn't want to have to bid on it, because if he does, he's going to cover himself. But it may come out a lot less than that. It may go well.
Yeah.
So you would know, what are we allowed to do without requiring bids?
Well, that's a good question. Sometimes what you do is you get a proposal and let them do it on that portion on a time and material basis or something. We could probably figure out a way to do that. One thing we could do is get individual prices for removing each of the items that we want to get rid of, you know, $1,500 for this pile of lumber and stuff, and $2,000 for that boat and that sort of thing. And then we can award any pieces of that that we want up to what the money that we have. And we could consider a proposal to, if it looks like that concrete boat is something that nobody knows for sure what it's going to take to do, then we could take some of that risk off the contractor by saying, well, we're willing to do that on a T&M basis. So I think we can come up with a way to deal with that. But thanks for bringing that up. That's a good point.
The other thing I wanted to suggest was that possibly we could leave the disposal of these things up to DRC discretion. I've talked to Ian a couple of times. He thinks they can handle it, both the fiberglass boat and the concrete one. I don't know what Paul thinks about that. I haven't talked to him, but shipping it out of town seems to be the most expensive thing. And if they can handle it or confident of that, then I think we should let them try.
Right. Yeah, I think we can work that out both as we develop the RFQ. We could specify, after reviewing it with Paul, we could specify where these items are supposed to go. And if they can all go to our DRC, then that's fine. And that might be that might keep the cost down. We don't have as much shipping. When we did earlier cleanup work there, we buried a bunch of the stuff within the harbor in a depression and that was a good solution. So yeah, okay, I think that those are some things we can work out as we develop the RFQ. Okay, any other questions on that? I think we're gonna finally get the rest of the junk out of the harbor, which I've wanted to do for years. The next one is the approving a scoping document for the fire department water tender. And we actually have the chief here. Chief, would you like to speak to this item for the council?
So this kind of project is hoped to replace our Tinker 2, which is a 1983 international manual transmission with a newer actual water tender that's actually meant to replace, to actually transport water to a fire ground, actually have an internal pump. And also it hopefully come with a way to transport a snap tank or a pumpkin, basically a portable tank to drop 2,000 gallons of water into. This also has actual safety working lights as well as warning lights, stuff I kind of like put into the Stokoe document here. I do reference the Final Squirrels commercial CJ series a lot. I am open for other ideas. However, as you might notice in the agenda, I actually am putting in a grant or request approval put in a grant to purchase the such water tender. Our kind of our current issues right now, Tinker 2 is not, it's safe enough, but it's not up to the standards that today's is NFPA, which is basically OSHA for fire service. And I'm sure everybody generally knows what OSHA is, but has basically certain standards, and in order to meet them, I think a lot of stuff vehicles are grandfathered in, and we could probably do better. We can do better, having proper seatbelts, adequate storage, and even defrost. To let you know, it's not something that we added something to the fleet. Where my whole goal is to purchase this new water tender and then sell Tinker 2, because I'm sure there's other avenues that can be used for in the construction world. And I'm sure there's other people that in town that would be willing to use it. It is 39 years old, and NFI Tinker 1. It's actually getting there up there too. It's like 36 years old in 1986, I believe it was. Yeah, like I mentioned, waste belt is, it still has waste belts in it, which is not really considered safe. You're not going to find any vehicle new, not large, that are going to have waste belts in them. In fact, I think it's illegal to have vehicles built that have waste belts in. Yeah. And also both Tinker 1 and Tinker 2 do not have defrost in them. While we can keep the, one of the tankers inside of our base and keep the frost out of it when it rains and start fogging, when glasses start, windshield starts fogging up, it will, we have no way to clear it without having a towel wipe it off. Not only that, there's a lack of storage on the outside of the vehicle, proper storage, that requires us to have storage inside the cabs for some other things. This can lead to stuff falling into the pedals, not allowing us to stop in time, stuff like that. It's just a hazardous situation. We do try to minimize stuff to what we absolutely need in the tankers, but even then there's still stuff we require to have. Also, because the tankers are meant to be a slow construction vehicle, it's not designed, there's no really like a baffles inside the tank itself. There is some baffles, but not much. And you can actually feel the water moving around quite a bit when you're moving, even going 20, 25 miles per hour. So it causes a little bit of a grief driving those vehicles. And then also there is a question of like how much will it cost to bring Tinker 2 up to operational standards, because there is issues going on with it now. One of them being is that the clutch is actually slipping, and also the kill switch to turn it off is, well, you can't. You have to actually stall it to turn it off. And so it will cost a lot more than I think what we get out of it to bring it up than it would be. So the other avenues, I don't expect the city to fully fund this at all. I definitely will be looking for grants, looking on ways, but a lot of grants do require a cash match for it. One of the big ones is AFG, the American Firefighters Grant, Assistance Firefighters Grant. It will still cost roughly around, well, actually I have that in my next project. I'll leave that for the next. There is a little bit of a cost. This one, I working off a grant, a quote that I got last year before I actually knew about the policies here. And knowing that the quote last year has gone up, like a lot of things in this dying world, I was guessing off it. The estimate cost, I guess it's gonna be around $400,000 to purchase, then around 10 grand to ship it from where it is to up to here. There's also the potential maybe of using grant writers, because I mean, I'm willing to write the grant and work up and to help myself. We might have a better chance than actually contracting out grant writers to that know the grant itself, know what the words put in, know what information they're looking for to purchase this one. So just bear in mind that the prices I have in the project scoping document is an estimate. I'm guessing it went from like $300,000 up to around $400,000, but it is a guess. Like I said, as far as funding sources, the quote, I did put 15% off because at the time, that's what I thought, but not 50% off, sorry, 15% match for the AFG grant. I actually was wrong, it was only 5%. So that actually does bring the $61,500 down to $20,550, thereabouts. That's what all it would cost to put us into for the grant. Not initially, if that's when upon awarding, it doesn't cost anything to actually apply to a grant, unless we apply to from where. There are other ways we could possibly go. The least amount is spending the money to fix Tinker 2. One of the main concerns is that it's going to cost a lot of money where it's worth, and getting his age is going to cost more and more as it has more maintenance issues. And there's also there's also the training aspect. Not everyone able to drive a manual transmission, and having someone teach and learn how to drive a manual transmission in a large vehicle, which they don't normally drive to begin with, can cause extra stress. So there is kind of like that aspect too. And also getting rid of just Tinker 1 and leaving going to Tinker 1, just do one Tinker, can cause also slow down our fire operations. We go through roughly around 2,000 gallons of water in about 15 minutes with our engine one, with just one line going. And getting water onto the scene is actually vital for this drowned world. We don't have hydrants. We don't have, not everywhere has a close water source. So the two main sources of water that we use is the gravel pits and Spruce Lane ditch there. And while there are other sources, we just had to have the tankers get there and come back. So having two tankers able to do a constant transport back and forth, a steady flow of water, very similar to like a hydrant. So that's why the best solution would be to purchase a new water tender to replace Tinker 2 and keep Tinker 1. Now, cause a little bit of lack of experience. I don't have much experience with actual water tenders. This could very well mean that the new water tender could perhaps be good enough to, because it's going to be going from a 2.5-inch hose pump to a 4-inch diameter hose for self-suction. And that in alone will suck a lot of water a lot faster than what we currently have. And that could mean that it's spending less time transporting water and actually get there faster, to the fire scene faster, which could mean that we could get away with just having one tanker. But currently my plans, I would like to see if we stick with two tankers if we're able to approve the new tender. Other than that, this will benefit the community. Not only that, it would be if engine one, our main fire engine, has to go down for maintenance, this new water tender that I hope to get would actually help as a standby fire engine. It's not a great fire engine, but it will pump water to the fire, and it will act like a fire engine while engine one has to go down for maintenance. Because it's not an if, it's gonna win. Every vehicle has some time, it has a maintenance, it has to be worked on. And there's also for the people who don't have a way to pump water, like I believe Elm or Bob Chase has, to burn large brush piles, there might be a good time in the community where they'll need a source, a small engine, a dedicated volunteers to go over and be staged next round of large brush fires, as large brush permits do require a source of source of water and pumped water to be on standby. So there is that potential of not just bringing up engine one, just bringing that smaller engine, which would be totally commit one our only engine to one source. There is a little bit of a permits, it has to be registered as an emergency vehicle, like our ambulance and our fire engine and tankers. So that's really no different than what we're doing. Other than that, rest are in the project scoping document if there's any questions.
Okay, I can confirm, having driven Tanker 2 on a number of responses, it's a real beast. And is not very productive. So it needs to be replaced for sure. One thing I wanted to ask you though, when we bought engine one, we bought a used and refurbished engine. Would you be looking in the used market, perhaps from some, firms like we bought engine one from, for perhaps a refurbished tender?
So I can continue looking around and looking at for water tankers. The only slight issue is like a lot of other communities down south, they have fire hydrants, so they don't purchase water tankers.
They don't have tenders.
The tenders they don't want to sell. Now, they're granted the Forest Service do have sometimes they have water tankers that will they go on
wildfires.
Wildfires, but they also sell. However, they don't refurbish, as far as I know. I've looked into that as well for like a kind of cheap. However, the most time is a lot bigger. The one I'm looking at is about the same wheelbase, same size as the water tankers we have. So it still fit in our bay. Yeah. There's no purposing. But I definitely be keeping an eye out. I have looked others, but not necessarily the same place as Angel One. But
I think Joe had a question.
Yeah, I've got a few. So the fire engine that we have now, we purchased, or was it, did it come by grant money or what?
I think we purchased that with city capital funds.
Okay.
And it was $150,000 or $65,000, something like that, I think.
And the is it tanker two that has the automatic transmission?
No, tanker one's the one that's automatic.
That's the one you're using?
That's the one we're using. Tanker two is the one that actually has the two stripes in the back.
Yeah. And manual. Is it 1,000 gallons or 2,000?
2,000.
And how long is the bay where you have to park that?
That one's a little over 20 feet. The tanker one, the bay fits as well in 20 feet, field, 20 feet roughly. Both tanker one and tanker two are, actually no, Tinker one, so on 20, low over 20 feet. The bay is fits about the same.
Okay.
Tinker two is a little bit longer. It has but it sits outside over the winter. We empty it.
Okay. But tanker one is the automatic.
Yes.
Okay. Right. So how long is this $400,000 job?
How long? Oh no, this is a 20-foot wheelbase.
Wheelbase.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, will it fit in that bay?
20-foot. It's approximately 20 feet. I had to look at that quote again. But our bay is like 27. So it's still going to be fit about the same size as Tinker One.
I see. So, okay.
It would fit in where engine 27 used to park.
So yeah, as our bays kind of sit, the door, as you get in, the first garage door, as you look at the door, look to your left, that's where the tanker would sit. That's where the tanker normally is sit right now.
Okay, other Kyle?
Do you have kind of a rough idea on what the replacement of tanker one we could get for that if we did sell it to kind of offset the cost? Or tanker two, sorry.
Tanker two?
Yeah.
I never really actually sold large vehicles before, so I wouldn't say. I would probably want to guess around 15, 20 grand. Because I mean, it's still a decent engine, and it while it does have some issues with it, it will cost about that same amount to fix.
Kathy?
I think, I'm not exactly sure, I'd have to look at our policy, but I think we would have to do a disposal of equipment and put it out for bid. It'd depend on, we'd have to have a starting point at it, I guess. We could have a starting point, but unless we got more than one bid, we'd probably have to be stuck with taking what we would get for it. Now we could put it out to more than one community, you know, if people were willing to transport it, but I think there's enough contractors here that might be able to use it for other purposes that they would bid on it. Personally, I remember when we first got that, it's a bit of an albatross. And he's right that we don't really want to be trying to throw good money after bad. Let the people who know how to weld and operate machinery deal with that. And I think, you know, having more of the volunteers be able to operate the equipment in a more expeditious manner is something that would greatly help us. And we might be able to find a match in some other places besides just here, depending on the costs.
Yeah. Yeah. When you listed off that list of concerns with the current tanker too, and the thought of either one or both of those going down in an emergency plus the response time, I think it's a hugely valuable thing if we could find other sources to match with it. That's why I was curious about the cost to offset it. If you had a rough idea, but yeah, I understand that's kind of a loaded deal.
Yeah. I mean, I can get blue books out and maybe figure out, and I have the VIN number, which actually I was able to get the year because I didn't have any year except for the last inspection I ever had, which I think it was years ago.
Maybe it would cover some of our match at least. So
there is a potential. I think we can apply for a mini grant, which then could offset, but I'm not.
Yeah.
If you find a used one, does grant money apply for that?
I would think so. The AFG grant, reason why I using the preface one is that we have to basically pick what we want to use. I had to really look closely at it, but from my understanding, from applying for it last year, we had to show we had something in mind and actually apply for it. And something used, while it is something a good idea, they don't necessarily last that long on the market all the time. So by the time the grant is like, oh yeah, we got the money, by the way, for this vehicle, that vehicle could very well have been sold. And I'm sure the person who with selling don't want to basically hold on to something just in case some city has waiting for money. But I if look into the grant a little bit.
Okay. Good. I think it sounds like something. I mean, it's a matter of we approve the scoping document, and that starts the project and authorizes us to look for grants and do more searching for what kinds of equipment are available. What can we get for a grant, and are there any used rebuilt ones? I remember we looked into this a little bit when Chief Miller was here, and I think at that time we found a used tanker that looked pretty good. It didn't last very long on the market and it was snapped up. But so there are possibilities, I think, but we'll just work the project and see what we can get for grant money, and then see what that money will buy in the way of a new tanker or tender. So any other questions? Anybody online with a question? I'm not seeing any. Okay, well, thanks. The next one is approved grant proposal, Assistance Firefighters Grant Program for the new water tender. So that's essentially, that's related to what we've been talking about here. So we would approve that as well, and that's in the packet. The item 9 on the list is introduction of AMLIP gravel pit fund, and all that is a transfer. We have in our budget moving $6,000 from our receipts for gravel sales into a savings account specifically for making improvements at the gravel pit. And so that's just a housekeeping item to do that item that we've already budgeted. So we will introduce that one and have public hearing in October to approve that transfer. But it's just a transfer to a savings account from our operating budget for this year. The next item 10, actually has another piece to it that we don't have in the packet. And in fact, I'd like to start with that other piece, which is the scoping document for the Hardin Beach Trail. Now, a year ago, We wrote this, we wrote up this scoping document. And at the time, we didn't have the CRMA done for the beach. And the council wasn't really ready to move forward with this at that time. We wanted to concentrate on getting the CRMA done. So we've finished the, we got approval for our development plan, and which includes this trail, but actually the original, as I recall, the original CRMA also had a, some sort of hardened trail in there for, that would be suitable for, well, even for wheelchairs. We're not calling it a wheelchair access trail because of the extra design baggage that goes with that. So we're calling it a hardened trail that we intend to be well enough constructed and firm enough so we can roll a wheelchair on it easily. So we're reintroducing this for approval to restart this project. It's something that we have promised to a sector of the community that has felt that their access to the beach is restricted and they can't enjoy the beach the way a lot of the rest of us can. And we want the beach to be something for everybody to enjoy and be able to access. And so this trail will make it possible for somebody to reach the viewing bench and also the campfire site. It has in built into it some improvements to that campfire site. We probably cut a trail down through that stabilized dune that's sort of the back of the campfire thing so that we could come from the existing trail and cut down. You could roll a wheelchair right down there to so somebody could sit right at the fire with everybody else, and we'd have a little bit of a pad there is the idea. Now those details could change as we develop the project a little bit, but that's the concept. When Justin Marchbanks and I worked on this a year ago, we came up with the estimate that you see in there for the concept that we had for a compacted trail. And with a contingency and everything that we put into every project, it makes it something like just under $43,000. May not cost that much. We'd put it out to bid and there are several local contractors who might be capable of bidding on it. So there on the screen right now, you see the gravel trail compacted, $34,000. And we're thinking in terms of, we figured out how much gravel we've got to pull, you know, and how wide it has to be, and we have to level it out and so forth. So kind of figured all that in with a compacted gravel surface and a stone fire surround around the pit, and maybe a couple of benches that we just arbitrarily said, well, $1,500, you know, in the budget for that, and a contingency of $3,900 brought it to $42,900. So we would have to describe this up a little more and then put it out to bid on an RFQ and see if we can get some local contractors to bid on it and build it. So we have to have, if we're gonna put it out to bid, we've got to have that money available in the capital budget, where this is a capital project. So hence the NCO FY23, the number yet to be determined. Introduction of capital project funding for the Hardened Beach Trail. That NCO would be for the same amount, the $42,900. I think I told her to just make it for $43,000 even. And so we would introduce that this month and approve it the next month. If for some reason the council didn't approve the scoping document, or the project, then we would just take the NCO off the agenda. So, or we would vote it down or something. But I hope you would support this project, because I think we owe it to a portion of the community that, and we do occasionally hear from them saying, when are you ever really going to build this for us? So I hope we really can get it done. Comments, Joe?
Yeah, I feel like I'm hogging the mic here tonight. But,
glad to have you.
Everything related to the beach has been pretty divisive in the community right from day one, and what we've done so far has passed. But this hardened path is just another step in it, is we're not representing that much of a percentage of the community. If we decide to do this, we're representing a few people that have spoken up for their benefit. The fire pit is being used less and less all the time, just for the mere fact that it's $500 jog in a wheelbarrow for 500-foot jog in the wheelbarrow one way just to pack your stuff down there. And people are doing their picnicking in other places. I don't see that changing very much. Just one suggestion I had for the council to consider is the first 250 feet of that has always been the soft spot down in the dip, where it would be hard to get a wheelchair or even for some people, I guess, to walk through soft sand. Beyond that, that trail is already hardened, and I've never seen it not hard. So if they wanted to reduce this project, 250 feet of hardened trail would be one solution, and it would cut the cost. I don't know how much, but something. So that's what I wanted to add.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think as we, you know, proceeded with this project and developed, we'd rethink whether, you know, whether we've got exactly the right plan on this. Do we need, you know, crushed compacted rock for the whole thing or just for part of it? It certainly is worth taking a look at. And it sometimes you could roll out there, you know, all the way without any problems. It's pretty firm, but there is a good section that, like when I walked out there just a few days ago, I noticed it was all pretty soft. It'd be hard to push a wheelchair through. I mean, through a section of it, but yeah, we can, that we can, as we redo our design before we put it out to bid, look at those options. So in fact, I'd be glad to have your input on it as we do it. Any other, looks like Louis Sharman.
Yeah, Mike, I just wanted to express my really, really strong support for this project again, for all the reasons that you mentioned. Let's not put this off anymore. I think people have some well-founded expectations of the council on this, and yeah, we can talk about reducing the cost, but I definitely don't want to reduce the accessibility by doing that. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Any other things to? Ideas from anybody? Okay. Well, it's on the agenda, and I really do hope we can make this happen so that it does function for those people who have who don't find it easy to get out there at this point. So, and this is something that will serve people into the future. A lot of people who may, those of us who can easily walk out here now may not be able to in 15 years. So, we'll. Hope that it's something that helps a lot of people in the coming years. Okay, so that brings us down
Mr.
to-
Mr. Mayor, I just have a couple clerical things to confirm here for the agenda. We wanna move the beach scoping document and the NCO to new business, correct?
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing that entirely, Karen.
We want to move the scoping document and the NCO to new business.
Oh, yes. I think that would be a good idea. Let's put them in new business.
Okay. And then you and the council are okay with everything else on the consent agenda?
Does anybody think anything in the consent agenda shouldn't be on there? Okay. Looks like we're all okay on that.
All right.
Thanks for raising that. That's good to get that confirmed so we don't have to move something later. Okay, then in ordinance for public hearing, we have FY2302 NCO capital project funding that was introduced last month. And that is funding for a marine facility vessel that we approved the scoping document for that last month. And we, at the same time, we introduced the NCO. So this puts money in place, a $30,000 budget to purchase that. So we'll have money available and then we can look for a boat that falls within that budget somewhere. And we'll have the money ready to snap it up if there's a suitable, something like a Good Saint skiff that looks suitable. And then there's an extra $5,000 for the library roof repair. For the design for the bike shed that is a piece of that old library roof repair project. So we needed another $5,000 to finish up the design for that. And then we'll actually have a design available that we can put out for bid. And when we get a cost estimate on that design, then we'll have another NCO for construction funding for it. But this $5,000 is just to cover the rest of the design work being done by PND currently. I had them on, I gave them an NTP for up to 10% design. And so with this 5,000 passed, I can give them an NTP to take it to 100% design. So any questions on that item? Okay. Looks like Lewis Sharman. Thanks for pointing out. I missed that.
Yeah, sorry to come in late on this library bike shed, but I don't know the design very well. Does anybody know how many bikes it is designed to accommodate?
Yes, about 20, as I recall, and including with trailers on some of them.
Okay. At first glance, I'm a little bit and have been a little bit taken aback by a price tag of $20,000 before you even drive a nail for that. But you guys will talk me into it. It just seems like a chunk change for a bike shed for 20 bikes, but I will not oppose it unless somebody gives me a better reason. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we got a proposal from PND for that design, and that was the budget. They may not need quite that much. It also includes money for the fire marshal's approval of the design because it's an occupied structure. And we have to have the design approved by the fire marshal. So we had to have a design that would pass that review and would meet snow loading and other concerns. So hence the cost, and the cost of design works going up like everything else lately. So yeah, I share your feeling that it seemed like a lot for that, for a three-sided structure, but it is what it is. I think it'll be a nice improvement for the library. Any other questions on that? Okay. And that takes us down to item 12, FY2303, providing amendments to the city ordinance, Title V elections. We introduced this at the last meeting developed by the city clerk with a lot of research, and she gathered looked at a lot of similar language in other codes and adopted those for our code. We've had some inputs and suggestions already from the public. But Madam Clerk, would you like to describe where we are on this and so forth?
Sure, thank you. So each year with elections, early on in the summer, I start reviewing ordinances for elections in preparation for the October municipal election. And so every year I take notes, so I can continue to improve the ordinance and the way it's written and stuff. So this year I went through in two big pieces that are changing in this ordinance is the personal representative voting. This isn't addressed in our code, except for sorry, my microphone's a little bit far away from my computer and I can't see it at the same time as speaking into the microphone. So let me just find it in code. Well, I can't see it right now, but it in code, it addresses that an election official can be a personal representative, but it doesn't address that for anybody else. And so we needed to include that in ordinance so that anybody can act as a personal representative for anybody that requires one, basically. So that is included here in the first part of the ordinance that I'm introducing. And then the second part that I'm updating is, can you go down a page, Kyle?
The contest.
Thank you. Yeah, to the contested part. One more. Okay, thanks, Kyle. So this part was after last year's 2021 contested election became apparent that it needed to be updated. So previously it didn't include grounds for contesting an election. It's pretty broad, the strikeout portion here that you're seeing. And so I went to other municipalities in our area and size and reviewed theirs and adopted language from theirs to make it the contesting of an election more clear to the people and easier. So that if, you know, there were grounds for a contested election, that it could easily be done and knowing the steps to do so. And so that was my intention here with the contest of election section in our code. We did receive some comments on that section, and I really appreciate the fact that the public is looking at this stuff and reading it and sending us our comments, because it's really important. I've reviewed those comments, and they were sent out. What I did was I took those suggestions and incorporated them in a separate document so that they were easier seen and read in the same format as this here that you're seeing now. And I sent that separately to the council members so they could review them. Some of the suggestions were great. Others, I think, were misunderstood. And so I would love to invite a council member maybe to work with me tomorrow or Wednesday morning so that I can incorporate some of those suggestions to have for you at the general meeting on the 19th. All of the suggestions that were received don't change the meaning of this document. So I don't think that it's necessary to postpone this. I think we could incorporate whatever changes that we want and just keep it as a action item for the public hearing on the 19th. I'm happy to answer any questions of the council.
Okay, anybody want to speak up? Joe, you're on again.
Yeah, I think there are two or three at least community members that have concerns about this. I had a couple concerns. So there will probably be letters coming in this week with comments or suggestions. I don't know. But I mainly wanted to say that I don't foresee any problems with this year's election. And if for some reason we didn't get this hashed out by next Monday, I don't foresee that as being a problem. So that's just my comment.
Mr. Mayor, can Kathy. I ask Councilmember Vanderzanen a question?
I think Kathy had a... Oh, Karen, you want to ask a follow-up? Sure.
Yeah. Councilmember Vanderzanen, I'd be interested in hearing what your specific concerns are with what's written.
Yeah, I'm not prepared with that right now, but I could get back to you.
Okay, thank you.
Kathy, did you have something you want to say about it?
Well, I just wanted to say that having read the previous ordinance or policy and having read this one, I feel like it further clarifies the issues that we may have run into before. I don't think it takes anything away from anybody. I think it broadens people's ability to actually be able to vote. I appreciate that people came with solid suggestions on how to change that. I would hope that the people who have concerns would put those concerns directly as to which the issues are. I know that the clerk spent many hours trying to look at the entire picture of issues and things that were happening. So I would encourage any council members who think that there are people with issues to bring those forward to Karen very specifically, so we don't maybe run into something like this again. I don't anticipate we're going to, but I think that this expands the ability for people to be able to vote. And so absent of that personal representative thing, we wouldn't be able to do it except for an election representative. And this allows people who may be ill or sick at home to have representation. And I think it's important to get that taken care of before at least the November election. So I'm all about getting as many people to the polls as possible. And if you have to bring the polls to them, then we should have that articulated in our policy and procedure and our ordinance. So that's just my take on it.
Thank you. Louis Sharman, you have your hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. What she said. Plus, I'd like us all to be thinking about any ways at all that we can better get the word out to the public about these changes as soon as we can, just to try to forestall any ugliness that may happen for the wrong reasons this time around. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Louis. My sense is that it's not an issue of policy, but the suggestions that I've seen have mainly been wording or there questions about how things are worded and whether they're clearly understandable. And so some of the public may have viewed some of the text as not as clear as they would like, and they've been good suggestions around that didn't actually change the policy. So I think I would like to stay on schedule on this. And in fact, if Joe, would, is there a chance we can persuade you to work with the clerk on some of that wording, and you have, you're in touch with some of the concerned or the people. And then of course we have Leslie Sirstad here too, has made a lot of suggestions. But would you be willing to work with Karen for a bit on this to see if there are some specific changes we could make? We can easily introduce those changes as an amendment. The existing proposal has already been introduced, so it would be a matter of amending it, but that's what the public hearing process is all about. We get public, after we introduce it, we get comments from the public, and then before we adopt it, we have an opportunity to amend it, to incorporate ideas from the public that we like. And so we can do that. We can even substitute a whole section if needed. And then if it's just not working in the general meeting for some reason, we can postpone it, you know, and deal with it later. So Karen, do you have a
something
to say about that?
I do have another idea, since there are two sections that the council would be approving or adopting. I think the contest of election is what's tripping people, the council members up right now. I would still like for the personal representative to be passed. And so maybe we amend it by striking out the contested election notice of it. I'm sorry, I can't, I don't have control of the screen
contest
anymore.
Section, right.
That entire section.
Right. That's true. We could pass just the first part of it and not the second part, and then rework it more in the coming weeks and have a final version before next year's election. It is important to have a clear policy for how you handle contested elections, and our existing one didn't work smoothly this last time. There were some inconsistencies in the way that the ordinance was written. So I think we do need to fix that. We can make it better so it's clear what the process is, and it'd be easier for the council to follow it if there is a contest to the election. To my knowledge, this last year was the first time we've had a contested election, but it's always possible to have the problems would develop in the future, and we need to have a good process available that is clear to people, that people understand, and so we can follow the steps properly. Louis Sharman, your hand's up.
I think it would be a really good idea to try to resolve that the contested election section now before the upcoming election. I don't assume that there will not be someone contesting the results. So thanks.
Right. It would certainly be my preference to get it done. In fact, this was something that I put on the clerk's agenda early in this council year, something I wanted to see done, and she did too. So I'm glad we're getting to it. And if we can get it done before this next election, it's all to the good, as long as it is something that people are happy with. Okay, so
Mr.
that's the
Mayor,
plan.
Before you move on, I just want to get clarification on what is happening. So am I to work on incorporating these changes for the general meeting with Councilmember Vanderzanden, or leave it as is?
Do you agree to, I didn't get an answer for, I didn't twist your arm, Joe. What's going on? She's just wanting to know if you'd work with her between now and Wednesday and see if we can get something into the packet that would be a substitute, have some substitute language.
So between now and Wednesday is just Tuesday.
And
all right.
For the advantage to that is then the substitute would be in the packet. Now, we can still make changes after that, you know, so if you guys still needed to work on some stuff, that could be done and have it ready for us to incorporate at the general meeting. So, but getting it in the packet would be best so the public could see where we are at that point and that we're trying to respond to those thoughts that are being passed on to us. Okay, so I guess we got a plan on that. That's good. The next is item 13 will be providing for the amendment of City Ordinance Title 4, Revenue and Finance, Management of Funds, Deposits and Withdrawals. And that has to do with this. We introduced last month, you may recall that has to do with adding the, making it possible for the city administrator to be one of the signatories on checks. And there is both an amendment to Title 4 and I think a policy and procedure coming up that covers that, because we have to change the provision in Title 4, and then we also need to update our policy and procedure, which is a little later in there. And the policy and procedure had a lot of outdated language in it too. So Kathy, did you want to say anything about this?
No, I think that's pretty straightforward. But when I am a little confused about, I think somehow item number 8 on page 23, the resolution which first adopted the policy on submission of grant proposals and capital requests of $5,000 or greater, and then the policy exhibit A was attached to that. I don't think that was supposed to be in reference to Sol's getting the water tender. I think, so I had asked that we put this up not with changes, but just as a discussion item to review, because of this being developed way back in the day when there was a lot of unknowns and people were competing for grants and everything had to come up in front of the council to get reviewed for grants. And as a result of something that recently happened where somebody had applied for a grant on a deadline that wasn't competing with anybody else, it was within their own department for their own, you know, for their own programs. And they didn't even know of this document, and they had already applied for and received the grant to do good things with. And so I wanted to put this out there for comments for people to review it, because I think we need to work beyond that, especially when people hear of last minute things. And so I want to update this policy to say that we shouldn't have to go through, like, for bigger grants, yes, for sure. If there were going to be competing, you know, with other departments, for sure, we can put language in there. But when they find out about things for their own entities, for their own benefit, as long as it's, you know, part, if they need something outside of the grant, it's already part of their budget, or if it's going to enhance their programs and not cost us anything. I feel like we need to change this around to make it more modern and more all-inclusive and encouraging of departments to apply for grants. So I'm just putting that out there. And if everybody's in favor of that, then we'll work on developing this process.
I'm sorry, I'm a little confused here. I guess I'm not following you clearly.
Okay, well, if you go.
Okay, so we're talking about, we're not talking about item 13 on the agenda. At this
okay,
point,
so
we're jumping.
If you go to item 8, which was the water tender.
Back to item 8. Okay.
Yeah, and go to past page 22.
Oh, okay. Going back to item 8. Okay.
And you see item number 8? Well, that was supposed to be its own thing. It wasn't in relation to the water tender. It was
so describe that right.
Yeah. If you can see, this policy goes back to 2010. approved on 2011, and here we are going into we're in 2022 going into 2023, and I think we've evolved a lot since then. And if people are in favor of trying to make it so that it's productive and works well for our departments, I'd like to rework this whole thing. And if anybody has any reason why they think we should still go through all of this minutia to get smaller, more beneficial grants to in our departments. Let me know now. Otherwise, we're going to revamp this together.
So what do we have to do differently?
We need to raise the threshold. We need to not have to have these smaller ones that are of only benefit to the library, for example, not have to go through such detailed processes to be able to request that grant.
Okay, that's a separate item from approving the grant proposal, right? That's a policy, that's a rewrite to the policy.
It's a rewrite of the policy for people to be able to submit grant proposals.
Right, okay.
So this started at $5,000, but it was back in 2011. And I would like to raise the threshold like we are doing on some other items. And I'd also like to sort of streamline the process for doing so.
Okay, is that something we need to develop for next month's meeting?
We do. We need to develop it. We didn't develop it because I wanted to put it out there first and hear people's comments on it.
Okay.
That was why that was in there. It just kind of got thrown in with the item number eight.
With item number eight. Okay.
Standalone item.
But it is not essential to item eight.
No.
Right. Okay. Now I'm.
Well, I mean, he's following the policy by doing this, but.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Because that I also asked that we review it. I'm sorry. I didn't realize that's why you put it in there. I just thought since I asked for us to review it, that's why it was in there and it was misnumbered.
Okay. Well, then let's put that on the agenda for next month.
Okay.
And then we'll bring that back up because I agree that that's very dated. It's from 11 years ago. So
And people aren't even aware of it and have already applied for their own little grants.
Right. Okay. That sounds good. Now I'm catching up with you. Okay. Sorry, I was a little slow on that.
Thank you. Sorry to muddy the waters. But, huh?
7 and 8.
Yes. Yes, they are. Okay. Sorry. So, and 13, we covered that one enough. That was this, but remember, we're just voting on what we introduced last time and you could review if you want to be refreshed, review the text in the packet on that. But essentially it sets up the signatory provisions to include the city administrator, which will make it a lot easier for us to get checks out the door faster without having to drag council members in here to sign them. Okay, item 14, we can't discuss in this meeting. Please review it's a quasi-judicial item. So it's with regard to a decision as to whether or not we waive or contest the right to file a protest to the alcohol license for the Sunnyside Eatery. And in a case like that, because it's a quasi-judicial matter, we handle it differently. And recall that we don't discuss details of a quasi-judicial item with anybody beforehand. We have to review essentially when we get to item 14, it's a judicial hearing. We make a decision based on the evidence before us at the time, which can include comment from the applicant, any contesting comments from the public and so forth. But we don't discuss it among ourselves beforehand, and we don't go out and investigate the premises or something like that independently, because you'd have to declare that you had done that and that goofs it all up. So we'll just review the packet that's part of the evidence, their application, and we'll take any comment from the public on it at that time, and then we'll vote on whether to waive our right to protest. Okay, is that, everybody understand that? Okay, little different deal here, so from the rest of our business. Okay, item 15, CY22XX, approving the appointment of election officials. We have a resolution, and so that one's pretty straightforward to just approve the election officials for the next, who are listed in the resolution. You can read that. Item 16, updating the policy and procedure for authorized account signers. That just updates a very old policy to now in the policy and procedure list the city administrator as a possible signer of checks, and it also gets rid of some outdated references to committees, and I think it that was written back when we didn't have a separate treasurer, where the clerk was the treasurer, and so it refers now to the treasurer rather than to the clerk with some duties. So it updates that. Any questions on that? And I think it's pretty straightforward if you look at it. So if you got a question on it, you could ask the clerk before the general meeting. Okay. Purchasing, yeah, the next one is another one on policy and procedure on purchase requisitions and purchase orders. Kathy, is that another one you wanted to explain to us?
I'm sure.
It's another one where we were updating things like amounts and so forth.
Well, again, in the interest of efficiency, the purchases from local retailers was only limited to Gustavus and couldn't exceed $100 without having to get a separate purchase order and or reimbursement. And $100 isn't the buying power it used to be when this was first developed. So we want to raise the threshold to $500, and we want to also change the local retailers from just Gustavus to Gustavus or Juno to make it easier for people like Ben to go buy $300 worth of line when he needs to go out there and fix something. So there's that. We also want to have, if the mayor is absent and wants to designate somebody, then to be a signatory, then the mayor can do that.
Yep.
We also, of course, you know, we would still consult with each other on all of this. And the same thing with the purchase order. We wanted it to go from 2,000 to 5,000, and it would require the mayor's signature or only or his designee if he designates somebody in his absence. The other thing is we wanted to say unless funds are encumbered through the approved fiscal year budget adopted by NCO or under assigned and fully executed contract. So for example, I brought in a professional services agreement that we gave to John Barry to sign for the work on the bridge. And these signatures have to go through everybody anyway. So why do we need another piece of paper that says that's a purchase order? We already have a signed contract, and other organizations work that way too. It's just to eliminate having to do so much paperwork. If you have a professional services agreement, you have the budget identified, you have the mayor's signature, you have the treasurer's signature, that should suffice as the document to be able to make payment from. That's the way we always did it at the college, and we had a huge budget up there, and it was an acceptable accounting practice, and it eliminates more paperwork. So we just wanted to include those few little instances where we wouldn't have to have one. We still might have to have one if there's a bunch of scope of work, but because those things would have to be billed separately. But if we do a specific contract for a specific thing, we want it to be able to serve as the purchasing agreement. So, and then we just wanted to change capital projects from construction because that better outlines the purpose.
Right.
So that's the changes, just to bring it up to date, bring it in line with current finances, and hopefully everybody will be okay with that.
Anybody have any questions for Kathy on that one? I guess not. I'm not seeing any hands come up. Okay, that I think gets us, all right, gets us through the agenda. I'll have a mayor's report. The only thing I'd say now is I'd encourage council members to drop by Grandpa's Farm Road and see the activity out there. We're building the bridge finally, and it's exciting. Will be the first major infrastructure project completed in Alaska with funding from the bipartisan infrastructure bill. And I think Stavis can be proud. We managed to score that funding, and especially without a local match. So we're grateful to Fish and Wildlife Service for making that possible and working with us to get the bridge done on a relatively short schedule. So we're meeting their goals and ours. Will have a much safer crossing there. The stream has already been reconstructed we pulled the culvert. Stream is all reconstructed. There today we're finishing the pads that the bridge sills go on. So tomorrow we may see the first wood on site. We'll have those sills coming in and being placed. And then shortly after that, we'll have girders going across for the bridge. And so I think within a week, we'll be driving across it. So I'm really happy with the stream. Looks really nice. And when the new vegetation takes on the banks and everything, it's going to be it's going to really look good. So I'm enthusiastic about that.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Before you move on to the other discussion items, I just wanted to remind people about Wednesday's deadline for submitting a declaration for candidacy.
Right.
It's the deadline on Wednesday the 14th. So far I have zero. And it's also the deadline to request an absentee ballot by mail.
Okay, yeah, so if you've got anybody you'd like to encourage to run for council. Last year, we were delighted to have two people running for every seat. And so it was exciting. And now it almost seems like we're back to a few years ago when we were trying to find any candidate. So maybe that means people are happy with the way they're going, things are going. I don't know. I'd like to hope that, but it might be pushing it. Encourage people to sign up and serve their community. Good government begins at home. I had some short items. I wanted to, we're renovating the old post office building or old preschool building, as we've been calling it. I'd like us to think of a new name for that building. So we don't have to make a decision immediately, but I think we need it. At some point we'll have a sign out in front, and for me, since we're kind of featuring that big willow on the corner of it, maybe it's Willow Hall there or something like that, but maybe you got a better name. I'd like you to think about that, and maybe next month we can, have a discussion of what we could name that building so that when we're doing contracts for somebody to rent it, we're not describing it as the old PO building or something like that. So We're making progress, as Kathy mentioned, on the improvements. The grass is already coming up where we hydroseeded it. And the next step, again, is to get electricity to the building. And then Ken McGowan can begin a lot of fixing up of the building to make it suitable for his bike shop. And we have a contract Kathy's been developing with him for renting it going forward. The next thing I just wanted to, we got a question from Lewis Sharman. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. Just going back one item, Karen, can we put out yet another call for declarations of candidacy in the next couple of days? And might we also be able to put something on the rumor mill? I think this is really, really important that we do everything we can to get the word out for people to run for those seats. Thanks.
Karen?
I did put out a notice on all those places except for the rumor mill a couple days ago. I'd be happy to do that again tomorrow, but I will not be posting on the rumor mill as a city employee.
Would there be any objection if I did? I mean, I think there's a section of the community that pays a lot of attention to that, and I can't think of any reason not to use it.
I would have to say that it's not appropriate for any council member or city staff.
Karen, well, you were saying that you didn't, in your view, a city council member should not post on that with that idea, even independently, is what you're saying.
It's just a lot cleaner that way. That's my recommendation. If somebody from the public would like to do that, that's fine. But as a city council member, I don't think it is appropriate.
Yeah, I think there would be room for you to suggest to somebody else to post it. Lewis, that might be the best way to do it. Somebody who's not actually a council member.
I'll do that. And Karen, it'd be great if you could put out another notice even tomorrow, and I'd appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah, they'll still have 2 days to. I have heard of a few people who are thinking about it, but maybe they need a little more coaxing. The next item I wanted to bring up is you authorized me to negotiate with DNR for the possible purchase of the Harbor Central Lot B2. In my initial contact with them, I found that they can't tell us anything until we actually file an application for it. And they want a $400 application fee with that. I plan to do that unless any of you object to spending $400 to apply for that. And that would kick off the discussion with them so we could find out what the terms might be, how much we'll have to spend, whether or not we can get it as some sort of municipal and charitable thing at a very low rate or what. But they won't tell us anything about the price until we apply. So either we do that or it comes to a screeching halt. So any objections? I think we're stuck with having to do that. Thanks. Another thing I wanted you to think about, and we can discuss in the future, I thought it'd be nice for us to have a contract for a groundskeeper for our parks and public buildings. Somebody who could make sure the grass stays mowed out there and the flowers get done, and maybe does some landscaping both in front of City Hall and could be also at the library and other facilities. It might be something that we put out an RFQ for and we have a contract with somebody who has a small business to do that. And we order work sort of like we do for road maintenance, only not spending anywhere near as much as we do on road maintenance, of course. So that's something I'd like you to think about. And maybe in the coming weeks, we can make a little more progress on that. We've made a lot of improvements on the park, and I think we can keep it looking spiffy and look even better next year for the 4th of July and the summer visitors if we have a means of contracting with somebody to do that maintenance work. They could fix picnic tables and all kinds of stuff like that. And I think that's really all I needed to bring up. We talked about having a John Barry doing project management work on our contracting already. So anything anybody else wants to bring up, council members, something you'd like to raise and discuss? Jim Muscoviac.
Yeah, I attended the Confluence meeting. It was about the outdoor economy in Haines. And it was a little touchy-feely, but there were a lot of really good people there. And I think I made some good connections that will help us. And I'll just read to you an email from Julius Adolfson. And he's the statewide bicycle pedestrian coordinator and rural transit planner for the Department of Transportation. And he wrote, thanks, James. It was great to meet you at Confluence. And I look forward to review your documents. Once I receive them, I'll introduce you to our regional planners at the Juneau field office. And I think that's where we want to start. These people will hopefully walk us through the process for applying and getting this stuff done. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. And thanks for taking the time to represent us at that meeting and capture the ideas up there. And even gave him a chance to speak to our senator while he was there. So. Senator Murkowski. Okay, anybody else have anything that we need to bring up? Jim, your hand's still up, but I assume you're done. Anything else? Okay, that's good. Okay, well, I guess we're through with our work session then, right at just under 2 hours. And so thank you all for participating. And watch for the packet to come out Wednesday and be prepared for our general meeting on Monday night. Thanks a lot and good night, everybody.
Hey, Karen, before